Welcome back to the Innovation Room. We're excited to have you here. This is episode number 4. We've made it to 4. So that's something to say. We're still enjoying it, still loving it. Can't wait to bring more episodes at you. This episode is, you know, business trends and what to look out for in 2021. We have a lot of, you know, past, present, and future kind of stuff going on here. We have big things that were happening in 2019, some of the highest economic growth the country's ever seen. And then we have 2020.
Pause. It stopped. March 2020 hit and COVID hit and we stopped. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of companies kept going, which is great. And, you know, we want to dive into, but, you know, a lot of people had to stop. And now the big question is, what is to come in 2021? Are people going to continue to kind of sit and wait to see what happens? 2 steps forward, 1 step back situation. I think we're still in it a little bit, but yeah. What's to come in 2021? When do we get back to 2019?
Exactly, and that's a big question. So what should you look out for and what should be on your radar 2021?
So the first thing that we're going to talk about are mergers and acquisitions. And, you know, back in 2019, there was a lot going on. Like we said, economic growth through the roof. But what those really are, what they mean, what we're looking at past, present, future, and what to expect. You know, a merger and an acquisition, you know, it's basically the same thing whether or not a brand name's changing. It's taking one plus one and making it one.
Yeah.
You're taking two companies and smashing it together and making one company.
Yeah.
Whether or not you're keeping that culture, that same, you know, business model is all in the fine print, but you know, we have those. What were we looking at back in 2019 though, when it was coming to these mergers and acquisitions? I feel like that they were really striving.
Yeah. So 2019 mergers and acquisitions were huge. They've, you know, been on the up most overall since like 2005 for the most part, you know, and some of the main reasons people, you know, like the idea of a merger and acquisition rather than starting maybe a whole new brand or trying to break into another market with their existing brand and building new stores is, you know, your technology and your data that you're acquiring from this other company. When you buy another brand, you're acquiring, you know, their patents, you're acquiring all that kind of stuff that is only allowed to be used by said brand until maybe, you know, some timeline is up, like with any patent. And the data is a huge thing. Data right now, I believe at one point was said to be worth more than the price of gold. Huh. Like information is worth more than gold. I don't know if you know this, we have kind of measured all currency based on the value of gold since the beginning of currency. So that's kind of a big deal. The other reasons to do so are for market share. Obviously, if you don't have a large presence in a market that you'd like to be a part of, you can acquire another company, come in there, rebrand, and that'll take over part of that market share, or the overall market share for your brand is going to increase in general.
Right. So there's, in mind, what I've seen in the past is there's 2 different types of acquisitions or mergers. You know, there's the horizontal, which is brand within brand. It's mm-hmm. selling the same thing, same business model type, you know, clothing, whatever it may be, retail, grocery, buying grocery. Similar business clientele, but there's also the vertical market, and the vertical market is 2 other people buying that aren't really aligned. It's not ice cream selling ice cream. It's a cone selling company buying the ice cream business. I feel like we didn't see as much of that as we see as much as the horizontal, the like for like. Does that sound right?
Yeah. And I think that's a good point too, as well, because the horizontal like for like also will allow 2 smaller brands to gain a competitive advantage in the market. Mm-hmm. And we saw a good example of this just recently with T-Mobile and Sprint being the number 3 and 4 in the mobile industry against, you know, Verizon and AT&T kind of taking that 1 and 2 spot back and forth. Yeah. By them aligning and combining, there's now 3 players essentially in the brand with pretty equal market share, so they can compete on a better level, where T-Mobile and Sprint probably both realized, hey, we're competing, but more against each other and not really against who we want to be.
2 small fish trying to compete with the big fish at that point.
Yeah. And a lot of these horizontals, I believe, you know, they're mostly for that reason, is that competitive advantage or that market share. And, you know, sometimes just getting that technology and data helps you get that competitive advantage or that market share as well.
Right. Now, that kind of acquisition, that took place, I feel like that took place in 2020, but I'm sure it had been in the works in 2019, because there's a lot of prep that goes into coming to a point where you're going to do a merger and acquisition.
Yeah. Well, as vendors and, you know, many of the other vendors who watch know, that's information we would always love to have, is when did they start talking about this acquisition? Yeah. How do I get this intent data? Like, what are they intending to do? What are they going to do moving forward so we can be first in there?
Yeah.
But once it usually happens, they release a little more of that information. Mm-hmm. And I think that actually probably started around the end of 2019 is when those discussions happened, from what I could gather.
Yeah. So you had the financial risk. You have the financial risks involved. And in 2019, it wasn't that big of a deal. I mean, it's still number one on your mind. But in 2020 now, the financial risk is a completely different ballgame. When people are setting on their money, even companies that are doing really, really well, it's they're kind of, I don't want to say hoarding money, but there's the two step forward, one step back
We've
been talking about, being very, very cautious about what they're going to spend.
Mm-hmm. Like, forecasting isn't really where it was, especially in 2019. The ability to forecast and see what's coming up in 2021 and 2022, this whole year has really muddled that down and made it very difficult for people to accurately do. We're seeing companies that were big companies skyrocket to the top. You know, companies like Salesforce, like, you know, a digital platform with the CRM or Zoom.
Mm-hmm.
Zoom was... people didn't even know what Zoom was. I think most people use Skype still, maybe, before this all happened. I'm not 100% sure. I didn't really FaceTime much.
Yeah.
Skyrocket all the way to the top.
Yep.
You can't forecast accurately like we were able to in 2019. So people are weary to invest, but they are still doing it, and they're ready to start doing it again as soon as they feel comfortable with that forecasting in 2021.
Yeah, so you got to make sure it's the right strategic fit. You know, and there's the financial risk. There's a culture risk, there's the managing risk, and then you have timelines that you have to worry about. A lot of these things stay very quiet for a long time. Like you had said, we would love to know when the T-Mobile Sprint thing happened, mm-hmm. or when it started to happen, because these things do take a lot of time. There's a lot of things involved, not just financially, but asset-wise and management and employees, and I mean, you name it, there are so many levels to this. And I think a lot of what we're seeing right now are people pausing work, like we were talking about.
Yeah.
But closings too. And that's the big scary thing on everybody's mind, is there's closings happening, but how many of these companies are going to go through an acquisition or merger instead of that?
True.
You know, I see a lot of industry specific things that worry me right now, and that would be like the non-essentials. So the non-essentials, the movie theaters that all shut down. You've heard rumors about that. You know, is the cinema going to be able to pick back up, and are they going to be able to pick back up where they left off? Are people going to go back to these non-essential companies and put themselves at risk during COVID and further expose themselves when they know that they can do the majority of the stuff online or they can stream on demand? You know, it's what to expect for 2021. Where does the future go?
So a couple things or indicators that 2021 is going to be looking well is we have a link below here for an article that the experts are talking about 2021 and relating it to 2008 and 2009 in a way, as the merger and acquisition industry is considered, at least, where they rebounded quite well in 2009. We went through a similar dip like this. People were very weary to invest. The ones that had money to invest were still kind of holding on to it. Any kind of economic downturn is going to do that to a business.
Yeah.
But they bounced back very well in 2009. And using that as really the only information or the most relevant and recent information we have to go off of, I feel confident that the same will happen in 2021.
Mm-hmm.
Also, you know, typical things that we've seen with any kind of disaster or something that's unfortunate that happens to a large community or a large sector of, you know, a business, there's always opportunities to be had.
Right.
Even with some of these businesses going out, there's a lot of acquiring opportunities to be had for the businesses that are staying afloat, mm-hmm. whether it be acquiring for technology, for market share, for just space, whatever that is.
Yeah.
So 2021, I think there's a lot of opportunity, and I think that it will be going well. So we kind of want to get into more like, what have you seen on your end, you know, regarding the signage and branding industry with mergers and acquisitions? Because we have a couple pretty large clients that we do these for often, and we've become pretty good at getting these done.
Yeah, yeah. No, we do. And you talked about a big one that happened just recently, which is T-Mobile Sprint. We don't necessarily do business with them, but we do with other companies. You know, I've seen storage, you know, regular storage companies, cold storage companies, and some other, you know, that are still doing acquisitions and mergers. The thing that has really been daunting is when these companies are taking over, we've talked about the risk involved, but there's also that timeline. And I quickly hit on that a minute ago, but like industry specific wise, the timeline's huge.
Oh, so important.
There's so many things that are involved post acquisition. Mm-hmm. That is just crazy. And now we deal with a lot of government things, permitting timelines. People want their brands changed quick, right? But yeah. We have a lot of things that we have to worry about from a signage perspective on the exterior stores that governments regulate. Now, these governments are working at half capacity, quarter capacity, maybe remotely, maybe full capacity. We don't really know. We don't have a good judgment on that or judge on that and handle on it. But it's... you can tell things are taking more time, and you can tell that these mergers and acquisitions aren't happening as much because the people that are involved with that, they're really fine tooth comb and everything.
Yeah.
To where before we wouldn't have to worry about certificates of occupancy, COOs, fire inspections, making sure old permits from the facility were up to date. A lot of the times that could be an oversight for a government because they're so overloaded and overworked that it just, they fly right past it. Now they're going through everything.
Yeah, they have extra time.
They do, and it directly impacts the signage permits. If they notice something's out of whack and something's currently in process, they'll put a freeze on it until they get everything else fixed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they can hold it hostage if you want to call it that. And so it's really important to be early. It's important, I think, for the companies that are involved with this stuff from a signage perspective and the actual merging companies to get them involved early.
Yeah.
That way they can get a handle on how long it's going to take, because the last thing you want to do is do a merger acquisition and have the old company's name up there still for another 6 months to a year. You know, you don't want that to happen. And right now, the earlier you get us involved, the quicker we can get our groundwork running and moving to get that taken care of.
So it's more important now, I guess, than it would be before to work with vendors who have been in the situation, who have experience in it, who are experts in, you know, mergers and acquisitions themselves, not so much rebranding. We've all rebranded a location as assigned people.
Right.
I'm sure any electrician or any HVAC guy has gone in and he's, you know, rewired a building that's being changed over to something else. You know, if somebody acquired a single, you know, a new location, whatever that may be.
Mm-hmm.
But with the merger and acquisition, you got to understand this is large scale. This is, you know, it could be 50 locations, but it could be 450 locations. They could be spread from the East Coast to the West Coast, or they could be all centralized in one hub, like in Texas.
Right.
So you really need to have a partner that is experienced and knows what they're doing in helping with this. Some of the largest reasons why. So a typical merger and acquisition, if it happens, you're expecting your, you know, return on investment to be seen at some point. Like, this has all been calculated prior to going through the deals. There's always things that come up, you know, like maybe a building's not to code, or maybe a permit wasn't pulled the way it was supposed to be.
Yeah.
But you have an expectation of this, and half the reason this merger and acquisition may be beneficial to you, if it's not for a technological or data standpoint, is your return on investment is like a 12-month turn. So you're almost flipping, like someone who flips a house, but you're holding the asset for longer and you're using it for your advantage long term.
Right.
If you're not rebranding properly or going through these proper steps with someone who is able to get your timeline completed in the time it needs to be completed in, your 12-month ROI could turn into 24, 36, 48. And is it a good deal, or did you guys just, you know, make a huge mistake with this merger and acquisition because your plan wasn't where it needed to be?
Yeah, and it's everything, and that's what I was saying. I don't think it's just necessarily signage either. They need to get everybody involved early right now to get that moving. And I think that was important before, but now it's even more important given our current situation, world X, you know, situation that we're in. Yeah. So if the earlier you get people involved, the better off you're going to be. There's no reason to keep a secret for too long. Although I know that that's a huge risk of it too, is having an acquisition or a merger fall through just because something got leaked and, you know, people get cold feet and say, hey, we're pulling back now.
So with NDAs though, at least working with vendors and clients, I feel they could get those out a little earlier than they probably do.
Okay.
And that, you know, could be one of our tips here moving to 2021. There are lots of opportunities. Maybe look at getting those NDAs out quicker to your vendors. Mm-hmm. Make sure you have the right vendors in place so you're not, you know, last minute trying to change a vendor. Yeah. And I think that's going to help you moving forward and taking advantage of these opportunities and really positioning yourself well for 2021 once you believe your forecasting where it's at is where it's supposed to be at and you feel comfortable with now making these moves. Do you have anything really on mergers and acquisitions that we should add additionally as maybe a tip or takeaway for anyone looking into this?
I think you nailed it. Early. Get people involved early. That pre-plan, make sure you got everything taken care of. You know, I don't personally do mergers and acquisitions, but make sure you have everything taken care of.
Sure.
Make sure you check all the boxes.
Mm-hmm.
That way nothing gets held up.
Yeah, and we're not even talking like, you know, prices or surveys of any of this mm-hmm. stuff, because if the deal goes through, that's a lot of sunk costs. So right. we're not talking about that. We're just talking about get those partnerships Absolutely. In line, you know?
Yep.
And I think that's probably the best piece of advice we can give moving into 2021. We talked about mergers and acquisitions as one of the trends that was, you know, going strong 2019, slowed down in 2020, and is looking to go strong again in 2021 and kind of bounce back pretty quick. Mm. And in this episode, we're going to be talking about pop-up shops, because this is also a trend that's been building, kind of slowed down in 2020. I thought it would be a little more prevalent than it is. It's still being used, but I feel it's going to come back pretty hard in 2021.
Well, we're in a similar situation right now as what we were back in 2008, 2009, you know, the retail catastrophe years, when the economy crashed,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's when pop-up shops started becoming more prevalent. They started popping up more.
Yeah. That's what the they name. Do.
Yeah, but it's emerged to this this like $50 billion industry now. Companies are really taking advantage of it. You know, you're talking about something that could last a day, a couple days, mm-hmm. a couple weeks, or a couple months, depending on what the company's looking to achieve. Now, you know, you have different things that you can do here, and most of the time a company is looking at building interest or seeding an idea, a low financial risk to have a pop-up shop or to get great research and data.
Sure. Well, let me pause you there real quick. So for those that don't know what pop-up shops are, a pop-up shop is really what it is. You know, it's a store that you will put up that can be there for 3 months, a week, a weekend sometimes, mm-hmm. and use for various different reasons to sell product to the consumer.
Right.
And that's really what a pop-up shop is. I'm sure a lot of you guys have seen them around in malls and know what they are, but some people may not be aware, so just kind of want to give some background there.
Yeah, yeah, and you see them more maybe in the middle kiosks, right, in mm-hmm. the malls. Now you see them a little bit differently, which we'll talk about. But that was a lot of times when you saw them. They would pop up. There would already be a booth there. They'd take advantage of it, fill it with product, and sell. And that's where they're looking to build interest, seed an idea, have a low financial, you know, risk.
Yeah.
And see how they do. They get that data. It's a cheap way to get it. You know, you're talking about research has shown they can open these things up for $1,500, as low as $1,500 to open up a pop-up shop.
Yeah.
You know, and they've even looked at it from a longer term of 30 days, somewhere between the $30,000 range, right around there,
sure.
is what they've done. And that's kind of been the average for these. And I think the benefit a company gets from it is huge. But for me, it's always been more of a seasonal niche.
Sure.
For yeah. seasonal companies. So farmers markets, right? I consider those pop-ups. You've got Halloween. You've got Christmas shops that pop up. And that's happening a lot right now.
Oh, yeah.
Tis the season.
Oh, yeah. We're almost there.
Yeah. Tis the season for all of that. You see Spirit Halloween's popping up everywhere.
Yeah.
Taking advantage of short-term operation, low financial risk, but getting in, getting out, and then not having to stay open all year long, getting those long-term leases.
So traditionally, these were better used for a product like Halloween costumes.
Mm-hmm.
People buy Halloween costumes maybe 30 to 60 days out of the year. Some of those, you know,
yeah.
pre-planners that go all out with their Halloween costume.
Right.
But for the most part, that item is bought in 1 month of the year. So why would you have a store selling these year round?
Yep.
And people are looking more for specialty stores to get out of these big box retailers. A lot of people don't even support big box retail all the time.
Right.
So they don't want to just go to Walmart and get that costume because they know they'll be stocked. Mm-hmm. So these stores were looked at as for, you know, an item that's only sold once a year, or like you were saying with the farmers markets, you know, certain fruits are only grown, you know, or they're in season for a certain time of the year, certain vegetables are vegetables in season.
And you're getting fresher stuff, right? Or bigger stuff. You talk about fireworks shops, same type of pop-up, right? You see that and you get the bigger boom. You can go to those normal retailers. You can get the standard, just mass produced everything, or you can go get something different.
Yes.
And have more options. And that's what these pop-up shops to me have been historically. Now, I have seen in the past, and I don't get out and shop that much. I stay out of malls unless it's Christmas time. I don't want to do it.
Yeah.
and it's not that I'm not personable. I just don't like that jam-packed environment. Mm-hmm. But you have seen some retail spaces get taken up by more pop-up shops that may be retail or something not as seasonal as I called it, that seasonal niche of Christmas, Halloween, 4th of July.
Yeah.
What do you know about that, and what does that look like right now? Because I feel like that's growing.
It is growing. It's been a trend now for a few years, pop-up shop moving away from that seasonal product to more of a unique product or a personalized product for the shopper, as we've seen the retail experience turn more towards that personalized shopping experience. This is a low-cost, more efficient way to do so. Mm-hmm. Presently, there are a few different reasons why we may see some more pop-up shops. We have companies that are consolidating or liquidating some of their locations. They can use pop-up shops to deplete inventory in more popular regions where their clothes mm-hmm. or their products sell at a higher rate. Mm-hmm. They can partner with these malls who may have some of their normal shops or vendors that have gone out of business or moved out of their mall for, you know, cost reasons, whatever that may be. Yeah. They now have these empty spaces that they can fill, and they can fill them for these short periods of time until our economy is back to where people are, you know, more comfortable in signing a year lease, signing a 2-year lease, something like that.
Yeah, now, I don't know the data on it, and I've always been curious, and I don't know if you do either, but from my perspective, as online presence becomes more, as, you know, dealing with the current economic situation that we have, and seeing a lot of order online, pick up in store, or just order online, I mean, people are becoming more and more comfortable with that type of purchase.
Yeah.
And the retailers, or, you know, whatever they may be, the businesses have become more accommodating with free shipping or free returns on items that they may not like or want. So I'm curious, do you see that trend continuing? And do you see these pop-up stores becoming more and more frequent as some of these larger retail spaces open within interior malls and exterior malls? Because the upfront money to do a full 1-3 year long lease is not worth it.
Yeah.
For so 6 months out of the year.
We're seeing a lot of the economic toll or economic changes actually taking effect where people are looking for things that are recession proof. We have small amounts of data on what a grocery store in your mall does to your overall, I don't know, I guess your overall income that you bring in mm-hmm. or anything to do with the, how well the mall is doing.
Right.
A lot of malls you wouldn't see grocery stores in. But no. During 2020, we saw some malls thriving and killing their competitors, for lack of a better word, just because they had a grocery store and people wanted to do one-stop shop because mm-hmm. we're trying to stay inside, we're trying to stay out of public places. I read an article about somewhere, I believe it was Arizona, there were two malls. The one mall with the grocery store was the one that was hurting and kind of doing bad the past couple of years.
Right.
And it almost just completely crushed the other mall because the other mall had no grocery as a part of its, you know, overall plan. It only had retail and a few restaurants.
Right. So same kind of type of concept as, you know, mimicking on a different scale, different completely atmosphere of a Walmart, a Meijer, or like a Super Target, things like that, that offer grocery, clothing, and your one-stop shop, but doing it in a mall atmosphere where you get name brand opportunities along with being able to do your shopping for grocery for the week.
Sure. Yep. And there are many other reasons that the pop-up shops will continue to do well in 2021, and I believe come back as we see some brands kind of dipping out or having to, you know, get rid of some of their stores. We see the other brands that are doing well, the Nikes and the Adidases of the world, mm-hmm. that are always going to continue to do well. Right. Now they can gain more market share than they already had in places where they may have had little brand equity or not as much brand equity. And they can use these pop-up shops to test these markets to see what sells best in these areas, what products are best, and then they can, you know, move forward that way with their plan. Mm-hmm. You know, retail had also, as I said earlier, been going towards that personalized experience and the uniqueness of the items. A lot of your boutique style retailers, I believe what Francesca's was one of the larger national brands that you could go into their store and they may have a shirt that they're only literally like 30 made or 60 made. People really enjoy that because it feels like they're getting something special, which they are really because there's 60 in the world. How often are you going to, you know, run into somebody who has the same shirt?
Which gives it that unique feel that people are looking for.
Or if I, you know, if I go pick up a polo from really any brand, you know, a guy's polo, every guy has 15 different polos in their closet and they're all different colors. They really all look the same. Maybe your buttons are different. So you lose that uniqueness. And a lot of the younger generations too really look for that way to set themselves apart using these limited things. This, I believe, started a lot with online special drops, limited drops. Shoe brands, shirt brands, startups and stuff like that used to use these as a way to immediately deplete inventory in a single day. They would do an online drop of a product and it would be limited to 500 and it would be available for 48 hours. And almost every time it would sell out in like 12 hours because you're causing demand by decreasing your supply, which doesn't always work the way you want it to work, especially if your product isn't what you want it to be. But if you have, you know, good marketing, advertising, that brand building, that's going to work every single time. And these pop-up shops can do the same. You can open up for a weekend downtown Chicago, release the brand new Air Jordans, and maybe change the color of them. We have 400 that are this color. We're going to release the rest of the public in the thousands of this other color. If you want these, come here. This is where they'll be. And they're going to sell out instantly.
Now I'm excited to see with a lot of these retail spaces open right now with the closures, bankruptcies, what have you. You're going to see in the future here, real soon, some of these pop-up stores really establishing themselves, some of these brands establishing themselves as more permanent retailers. That natural turnover of retailers is happening, and there's going to be more permanent brands that come out of this. So it'll be interesting to see with these pop-ups, you know, as it always is, but more now than ever, because I think there's so much retail space open that it'll be interesting to see who really solidifies and makes a big name for themselves and become a more permanent fixture in these spots. It's exciting.
Who's trendy? Who blows up? You know?
It
happens overnight. We've seen it 100 times on YouTube or with a musician, you know. It's the same with retail and a lot of these products. So I guess if we're gonna leave the listeners with some things that they can do moving forward or some advice, you know, from a brand and rebranding perspective, what are your tips there on like what are the benefits brand wise to a pop-up shop?
So brand-wise, if we're talking, if we're going more industry-specific with signage right now, which is what we're in, it's timing. I mean, like with a lot of things, but it's also having the plan in place, knowing where you're going, what situation you're in, knowing the landlord you're dealing with, what the expectations are and criteria. Because when it comes to an exterior branding, there's a couple different ways you can do it. You know, from vinyl graphics in a window to temporary banners to more permanent signage. But you got to be really careful when you do that because timelines for each of those vary. You know, if you're looking to pop up quick and be gone, you're going to want to go with something low cost. But you also have to make sure with your landlords and the criteria that you're within that that's going to be allowed.
Some of them lease signing.
We've had it recently to where you get into a last minute situation, you're run, and all of a sudden you find out that like, this landlord is going to require you to do more permanent illuminated signage. And that's going to take 7 to 8 weeks versus a banner or window graphics that we could have up in 5, 6, 7 days, which is really what a lot of these quick pop-ups are looking for.
It's going to hurt your whole game plan with the pop-up there, you know?
If your whole game plan is low financial risk, it's you have to have that lined up. That way you can have that cheap temporary, you know, just signage that works. And a lot of those times when you do that, if you're using exterior signage that's temporary, you can then take it to other pop-up stores or store it away and use it again if it's properly taken care of.
So that is, I think, the biggest benefit of all these, you know, that low cost and the quickness it can be done. You know, like you're saying, a 6-week turn time for permanent illuminated signage through manufacturing, through shipping, through permitting, all that stuff, whatever it may be, shrunk to 5 days, you know, 3 days maybe.
Yeah.
And, you know, it can be manufactured or printed if it's a vinyl or a banner and probably installed that next morning or that day. Yeah. And you can be in operation and getting rid of everything you need to be getting rid of.
Yeah, you're talking a $500 to $2,000 spend versus a, you know, $8,000 to $20,000 spend. So really just pre-planning that, knowing what you're getting, and making sure that it's what you want to portray as well, because the brand is still important and you don't want it to look cheap.
Definitely, yeah.
You know, so it's, yeah, it's
sometimes
important.
Spend a little higher on the, you know, still disposable signage to make sure you're still maintaining your brand and you're not, you know, letting any of your brand be muddled or watered down in a way.
Exactly. There's some very temporary signage that can look very professional. If it's done by the right people, if it's made by the right people, and it can last you one, two, three different uses. You know, see, if you're using it seasonally and it's in a controlled environment, you know, you get the right company, they'll know what to do. Mm-hmm. And you'll know it. You'll feel good about it. They'll meet your timelines. And always, always, always being like as clear as can be about what the timelines are. Be firm.
Yes.
Know it. Be firm. Let it be known early. The earlier you know, the better off you are.
Yeah. While these timelines can be done in a much quicker fashion, we you still want to give people as much heads up as possible just to make sure there's no hiccups, especially if you're talking about a pop-up store that is a weekend or a month. You know, if you're there for 30 days, losing 2 days is huge.
Yep.
So, those are very, very good points and tips. And I think, we pretty much covered everything we wanted to cover on pop-up shops, you know, kind of a little history of how they started and where they're moving now. I think there's a lot of opportunity, especially with, you know, those personalized products for your audience and your customers. And a lot of the, you know, things that could help getting past 2020 or 2020 by depleting some inventory and kind of gaining some market that maybe you didn't have that opportunity to do so in 2019.
Exactly. Yep.
And,
yeah. It's exciting to see.
It is. It's great. Yeah. Thank you for watching. We've been doing this for a month now, and we really appreciate the support and the feedback that we've received from people across the community. It's been great. Thank you for the love. It, you know, helps us keep doing what we're doing, but we're always still looking for more information and, you know, to keep creating this content. We kind of want to know what you guys want to hear. We're willing to do the work if you tell us what you're interested in. So let us know. And I hope you've been enjoying the episodes. We can't wait to see you the next time.
Make sure you hit the subscribe and like button down low. Hit the notification bell so you can get notified every time we release new content and stay up on industry topics.
Exactly.